Thank you very much, Lynn, and thank you very much, Lori. If I remember correctly, Lori, last time you were singing a song, and I was like, oh, I have that song. I think I can play it. And this song, you gave me kind of a prompt for a song, too. You mentioned the word amazing. And as soon as you said amazing, I thought of a song by one Eskimo titled Amazing. So why don't I start with that song? Again, the purpose of the song is just to kind of become still and centered before we go into the teaching from the Seven Steps to Awakening. So once again, prompted by Lori, here is our song. This one is Amazing by one Eskimo.
We shall rise with the sun. Spend our time as one. Now there is no sin in anything. It's amazing. I love life. I hope you do too. I love everything. It's all amazing. I feel new. Do you feel new? I understand when they say we're born again. Cause I've been born again. I'm born again. And it's amazing. It's the best thing. It's glorious. It's life changing. Feeling, it's amazing. It's a blessing. It's glorious. It's life changing. It's feeling.
right. So wonderful. So we're here tonight, you all, to look at the 7 steps to awakening, along with my journal entries as I contemplated the 7 steps to awakening. I see a couple people here in the room that maybe have not been here before, or have they popped out? No, I think they popped out. So I think we're probably, I still see one. So let me just say that the 7 Steps to Awakening is a book of quotes by teachers like Ramana Maharshi, Srinivasagadatta Maharaj, Muru Ganar, Yoga Vasistha, and others. So it's a book of quotes. And the way the 7 Steps to Awakening works, if someone chooses to take it as a course, is that you read the quote at least 3 times, and you contemplate the quote, and you see what comes to you, I'm going to say, to be helpful in your spiritual practice. It's not meant as an intellectual pursuit. It's meant to help move you along spiritually by helping you maybe see things in you that you need to see, helping you realize your true desire in a deeper way so that you're more motivated, help you understand spiritual practice more clearly so that you can practice, for lack of better words, in the right way or with the proper intention. And in fact, last week's teaching was really focused on contemplation and the fruits of contemplation. And that's really what the 7 Steps to Awakening is all about. It's about receiving those fruits through contemplation. And tonight, we are going to begin with quote 683. So I've put in the room a couple times now the link to 683 in my journal. What I will do is read the quote that I contemplated, and then we will look at my journal and see what came to me as I contemplated this quote. This is a Yoga Vasistha quote from Step 3 in the 7 Steps to Awakening. There is no such thing as I, nor the world. There is no mind, nor an object of knowledge, nor the world illusion. One of the things that we did yesterday, for those of you who don't know, Jasmine is home for a week, for Thanksgiving break, home for a week from college. And so one of the things we did yesterday is we went and saw a movie that she loves. It's the Hunger Games series, and this was the 4th movie and the last movie in the series. And one of the heroes in the movie had been brainwashed, and he thought that his partner and girlfriend was his enemy, and he tried killing her. And then at some point, his name is PETA, by the way, if you guys know the characters. And at some point, PETA comes to realize that he's been brainwashed and that he doesn't know the difference between what is real and what is not real. So then he brings a new practice or a new survival technique into his life when he'll ask people. He'll tell people what he thinks he remembers, what he thinks he knows to be true, and then he'll ask, real or not real? And they answer him. They say real, or they say that is not real. And I watched it and I thought, what a wonderful, wonderful practice. You know, of course, we can't necessarily ask the people in our lives, is this thought that I have real or not real? Because many of the people, at least in my life, would believe all of the thoughts were real. And they'd say, oh yeah, that's real. But what I realize I can do is when an idea is coming up in my mind, like let's say I'm imagining, I'm going to just use Laurie as an example, but I'm making this story up. Please, everybody know I'm making this story up. Let's imagine that I perceived Laurie as writing something in the room, like she just now wrote, yes, I know the books and saw the other movies. Let's say I'm imagining that she's trying to say she knows the story better than me. I'm imagining that she's trying to one-up me. I can look at this story that's developing in my mind, the story of Lori trying to one-up me, and I can ask my inner self, real or not real, right? Real or not real. And my inner self will reply, ah, not real. And I can let it go. So I thought, what a wonderful practice, this real or not real question. And I feel like in 683, He's telling us a whole lot of things that we believe are real, that are actually not real, right? So he's playing that game with us, real or not real. Listen again to 683. There is no such thing as I, nor the world. There is no mind, nor an object of knowledge, nor the world illusion. So real or not real? And he's saying, not real. So why don't we look and see what I wrote in my journal when I contemplated this. This is 683A. What if I let go of all ideas of I? What if I let go of all meaning about why I am doing this or that? I could think I continue this 7 steps contemplation process because I am not awake. But isn't that a story that emphasizes I? Who isn't awake? I could think I continue this process because it is helpful to others. But isn't that just a more inflated idea of I? What if I skip the stories and stay with only what is known? I sit and practice 7 steps when I feel to. Just as with everything, I am moved. Any meaning I give to the movement is simply interpretation that further emphasizes the idea of I. So here we go. Tonight we're going to play PETA's game, real or not real. Once upon a time, I wrote a message along with the inner voice, which I called Holy Spirit. And the message, some of you might know this message, it became quite well known even though it was just a personal message. I think the message was called, Is Attack Real? It was a real or not real message. Is Attack Real was the name of the message. And one of the quotes that came out of that message, which people quoted for many years, I haven't seen it quoted for a while, but people quoted it for many years, is this quote. Love is giving to Spirit, through Spirit, that which Spirit requests. Some of you that have been around a long time might remember that from the Is Attack Real message. Love is giving to Spirit, through Spirit, that which is request. And the idea behind that message was that if I have perceptions and ideas about attack and defense in my mind, like if I imagine that Laurie is going to one-up me, you know, every night when I come in here and follow her, she's going to do it again. She's going to try and one-up me and show that she's a better spiritual teacher than me. You know, if I have this made-up story in my mind, then a couple of things can happen. One, you know, Lori could type something very innocent, like, yes, I know those books, and I think she's trying to one-up me. You know, it's my interpretation laid onto something. Or, you know, some kind of an energy could actually kind of develop, you know, you could say, between what appears to be Regina and what appears to be Lori. And pretty soon Lori is, you know, kind of one-upping Regina, or at least trying to one-up Regina. You know, different things can happen. Through love, because as I contemplate the idea of someone one-upping me, I start to perceive or even experience someone one-upping me. That's love, giving to Spirit, through Spirit, that which Spirit requests. When I worry about being one-upped, I'm actually requesting from the universe, please give me this experience. But what was really important about that message is Attack Real is that it was showing, therefore, if I always imagined that Lori was one-upping me, you know, and that should become a self-fulfilling prophecy where Lori is in here one-upping me, that actually, although it may look like Lori is attacking me, what's actually happening is love, right? What's actually happening is love. So if I was to play PETA's real or not real game, even if Lori is typing something, you know, like let's say, you know, Lori types, Regina, you are so full of crap. I mean, she types it. It's pretty blatant, right? I can still ask real or not real. I've been attacked, real or not real. And the answer is not real because it's only love. It's only love. It's not attack. That perception could not arise if our minds did not focus on ideas like attack and defense. So as we focus on ideas like attack and defense, the appearance, you hear that word? Appearance of attack appears. But it's just an appearance. It's not real because all there is love. So that was the is attack real question. Let's see, Dance has a question. Let me read Dance's question before I go back. I have a question. Asking the universe for experience without realizing it. If I ask for happiness, expect happiness, the universe would show me what happiness is not, so I could recognize it. Sort of a question. I'm not certain I quite fully understand the question. Asking the universe for experience without realizing it. If I ask for happiness and expect happiness, the universe would show me what happiness is not, so I could recognize it. I think if I understand the question, the answer is yes. You know, that if we want perfect happiness, if we want to be only love, for example, in a very sincere way, one of the things we'll start seeing are the blocks to that experience. That's what's often called the purification phase. Yes. Like, dear God, give me patience, opportunities to practice, it would show up. Absolutely. Absolutely. We'll see all of those other things. But let me get back to this particular, let me get back to 683A and show why I shared all of that from Is Attack Real? 683A says, what if I let go of all ideas of I? What if I let go of all meaning about why I am doing this or that? And then the next line says, I could think I continue this 7 steps contemplation process because, and then it goes on to say, I am not awake, right? And then it says, but isn't this a story that emphasizes I? In that message that was received, is attack real? One other thing that that message says is, anything that you say after the word because, I don't know if it said is a lie or exactly how it worded it, is not true, it may have said is not true. Anything you say after the word because is not true. So, for example, if I say, I practice the 7 steps to awakening because I am not awake and it helps me to wake up, that is not true. If I say, I want to change my teaching time in the sanctuary because Lori is always attacking me and I don't like it, everything after because is not true. Basically, what the message said is, because of this divine law, love is giving through spirit, to spirit, everything that spirit requests. Because of this divine law, the only thing that is happening here, is that we are being moved by that divine law. The only thing that is happening here, is we are being moved by that divine law. That means that all of the reasons that we think for why we do the things we do, why we say the things we say, why we don't do the things we don't do, all of those reasons are, in Peter's words, not real. Not real. So as soon as I start telling you that I changed my teaching time in pal talk because a story following, the story is not real. I changed my teaching time in pal talk, if that were to happen, simply because I'm being moved by divine law to make that change. If you really contemplate this for a moment, you will realize we make up an awful lot of stories. We make up an awful lot of stories, way more than we may have been aware of before. I meditate because I didn't meditate today because I am cooking dinner for my family this week because I don't usually cook dinner for my family because, you know, I have another story. Just think about for just a moment how you think you have all of these reasons for everything you do. And what if you just dropped the reasons and became the observer of the doing? That would be an awful lot of not real dropped. Right? An awful lot of made up stuff dropped. Okay, so with that said, let's listen to 683A again. What if I let go of all ideas of I? You know, why I'm doing this, why I'm doing that, why I'm not doing this, why I'm not doing that, why I want this, why I don't want that, why I did this in the past, right? What if I let go of all ideas of I? What if I let go of all meaning about why I'm doing this or that? I could think, I continue this 7 steps contemplation process because I am not awake. But isn't that a story that emphasizes I? Who isn't awake? I could think I continue this process because it is helpful to others, but isn't that just a more inflated idea of I? What if I skip the stories? What if I skip the stories? What if I skip the stories and stay with only what is known? I sit and practice 7 steps when I feel to. Just as with everything, I am moved. Any meaning I give to the movement is simply interpretation that further emphasizes the idea of I. Think about that. If you carried around a notebook with you for a few days, and every time that you noticed you had a reason for what you were doing, you had a reason for why you go to work every day, because I need money, or you had a reason for why you quit your job, because I just couldn't stand that boss anymore, or whatever. And if you started writing down the reasons that you think the reasons that you think for why you are doing things or why you are not doing things. And if you wrote all of those reasons down for a few days, every time it occurred to you, what you would notice is that every one of those, quote, reasons simply emphasized that you are an independent person living a life your way, or as a victim. You could be the victim of everything. That could be your story. But what all of your reasons, everything that follows because, what all of that would emphasize, what it's really saying over and over and over and over again, is that you are an independent person. I cooked dinner because Jasmine is home this week from school, and she asked me if I would cook all of her favorite foods. And I am an independent person who, completely on my own, was able to decide that I wanted to do that for my daughter. Do you see? Usually, I don't cook for my family anymore because I am a vegetarian. My boyfriend is not. He eats meat. Plus, he doesn't really like very many vegetables. I like a lot of vegetables. And it's very difficult for me to cook for the two of us. And so I, as an independent person, have decided not to bother with it. And you know what? We believe these stories. Whatever your reasons are, whatever follows your because, you really believe. And you know what that means? That means in spite of the fact that we come into the sanctuary and we say that we are all one, and we say that the me is not real, the truth is, we believe it is. We believe that our interpretations, our mental interpretations of why we do the things we do, are true. We believe that we are independent people who can make decisions or be the victim of other people's decisions. We believe this is the truth. That means, in spite of all of our spiritual study and spiritual discussions and spiritual practice, we still truly believe that the not real is real. Remember, I told you when I started this teaching today that one of the purposes of contemplating the seven steps to awakening, in fact, I would say the most important purpose for contemplating the seven steps to awakening, is to enhance our spiritual practice. So when the realizations come, the realizations help us to, for lack of better words, practice better, practice more consistently, have a better understanding of the practice, and therefore practice with a more clear intent. And all of these things are helpful. So what practice is coming out of this discussion? What I'm hearing is the practice of when I notice that I'm believing a mental interpretation, when I notice that I am telling a story to myself or others, I am doing this because, or I am not doing this because, to start bringing awareness to that and start being willing to drop the story that follows the because and to accept that this body is just being moved by the divine law. Love is giving to spirit, through spirit, that which spirit requests. This body is just being moved as a result of that divine law. And anything that I think about why this body is or isn't doing something is only re-emphasizing the idea that I am this body, an independent, separated person with my own decision-making ability. Dances has been so kind to type this in the room for us, so let's read what's been written here. What if I let go of all ideas of I? What if I let go of all meaning about why I am doing this or that? I could think I continue this 7 steps contemplation process because I am not awake, but isn't that a story that emphasizes I? Who isn't awake? I could think I continue this process because it is helpful to others, but isn't that just a more inflated idea of I? What if I skip the stories and stay with only what is known? I sit and practice 7 steps when I feel to. Just as with everything, I am moved. Any meaning I give to the movement is simply interpretation that further emphasizes the idea of I. All right, I'm going to move on to 683B. I'll read again the quote that's being contemplated here. It's a Yoga Vasistha quote. There is no such thing as I, nor the world. There is no mind, nor an object of knowledge, nor the world illusion. says, the previous journal entry is no more than a helpful stepping stone. Yet any idea that reduces the idea of I is helpful. Any idea that emphasizes I lacks helpfulness, and it feels most helpful to abandon those ideas now. So this clarity is saying, of course, you know, when I look at this quote is really pointing far beyond my present experience. I don't know how else to say that. I mean, you know, the quote is saying there is no such thing as I, yet I do still experience an I. The quote is saying there is no such thing as a world, yet I still experience a world, you know. The quote is saying there's no such thing as a mind, yet I still experience a mind. And so my contemplation of this quote and what is coming to me in these journal entries is merely a stepping stone to move me in the direction of the direct experience that Yoga Vasistha is talking about. The direct experience of no such thing as I, no such thing as a world, no such thing as a mind. I think one of the mistakes that we make on the spiritual path, and I think that we probably all make it, one of the mistakes that we make on the spiritual path is reading the teachings and turning them into beliefs without having a direct experience. You know, so like, we can still believe that there's, as I said before, an independent I that's making decisions about whether I want to cook dinner or not cook dinner. I can still believe that, and yet I can come in the sanctuary and say, there is no I. I can throw those words around because, you know, we've turned it into an intellectual belief. We have an intellectual belief there is no I, an intellectual belief there is no world. And so we can come in here and we can say those things, but then we go back to, you know, whatever our daily life looks like, and we still live as an independent person in a very real world, getting upset sometimes about very tiny things. One way that we can tell that we've taken the teachings and turned them into an intellectual belief is that we can talk about them, but we don't really live them. So, for example, you know, when the stock market crashes, this is Eckhart Tolle's example, but when the stock market crashes, and if our money's in the stock market, we still get upset, right? The fact that I get upset when the stock market crashes, or that I get upset when my daughter breaks my favorite cup, or I get upset when I find out that my husband is having an affair, right? The reason I get upset at these things is because I still think that I am real and the world is real and my perceptions are real. I mean, this is why PETA tried to kill, how come I can't think of her name? I don't know, Laurie, if you remember the name of the star of the movie. I can't think of her name right now. Isn't that funny? Actually, of course, you know, Jasmine's more into this than I am. Katniss, of course. That's probably why I can't think of the name. It's not an everyday name, is it? Okay, so, yeah, Katniss Everdeen. Yes, all right. So the reason PETA tried to kill Katniss Everdeen was because he believed that his perceptions were real and that Katniss was the enemy. And so he tried to strangle her. He tried to kill her because he thought he was right. But then as the movie goes on, what happens is he begins to realize that maybe his perceptions aren't real. And so he begins to ask, real or not real. In fact, towards the end of the movie, he says to Katniss, he says, "You love me, real or not real?" And she says, "Real. You know, that's real. I love you." Right? Well, you see, we speak about there being no I, and we speak about there being no world, but we're brainwashed like PETA. So that just like he tried to kill Katniss because he really believed those ideas in his mind, we freak out when the stock market crashes or when our daughter breaks our favorite cup or when our husband has an affair. We freak. It's just like PETA trying to kill Katniss. It comes completely from believing the not real. There's no difference. My God, there's no difference. We only think, hey, look, I have a right to be upset when my husband has an affair. We only think that because we think it's real, because it was as deluded as PETA was. So how do we get from being deluded to being very clear on the difference between real and not real? I think spiritual practice is at least a part of that answer. You know, like right now, the spiritual practice that's being recommended is the spiritual practice of noticing, simply noticing when we start telling a story, I'm doing this because, or I'm not doing this because, and again, the story is just our made up reason in our mind, to start practicing dropping it, dropping what follows the because, and say, you know what? I'm just doing this because this is what I'm being moved to do. I can feel it. I'm being moved to make apple crisp now. I'm being moved to go downstairs and teach now. You know, I can just feel that movement in me. And of course I'm going with it. Of course I am. You know, I mean, the truth is we can only go with what we're moved to do. Sometimes it appears those movements are what we call ego energies. And sometimes it appears those movements are what we would call, you know, right-minded energies or spiritual intuition energies. But both the ego energies and the spiritual intuition energies come from the divine law. And if we appear to be able to notice both and to have a choice between those two, that ability to notice both and have a choice between those two also comes from divine law. You see, we're all like cogs on a great big giant machine. And although we think we can move separately and independently, we can't. Our cog moves because of its relationship to all of the other cogs on the machine. So again, 683B says, the previous journal entry is no more than a helpful stepping stone. In other words, this is Regina saying, I know that I do not know as a direct experience there is no I. I know that I do not know as a direct experience there is no world. And I know that I do not know as a direct experience there is no mind. I realize that I, to some degree, not to the degree that I used to be, you know, like the Course says, you're not wholly insane anymore, right? But I realize that to some degree, I am definitely still deluded. And so because I am definitely still deluded, I need the helpful stepping stones. The helpful stepping stones are moving me in the right direction, as opposed to being moved in the wrong direction, deeper into delusion. Just like in the movie, PETA, when he started playing the game, real or not real, that was a helpful stepping stone. He was trying to find his way out of the brainwashed delusion. And so he used the game, real or not real, to help find his way out. What if he decided not to use the game? What if he thought, oh my God, I can't trust anyone. I'm not going to ask them because they won't tell me the truth. And he decided not to use the game. He would have stayed in delusion. He would have stayed in the brainwashed state. The practice is an avenue. The practice is helpful. It moves us in the right direction away from delusion. So again, 683 says, or 683B, the previous journal entry is no more than a helpful stepping stone. Yet any idea that reduces the idea of I is helpful. And that's because I is not real. As I reduce the idea of I reduce the brainwashed delusion. Any idea that emphasizes I lacks helpfulness. And it feels most helpful to abandon those ideas now. This is like PETA. This is why PETA began to play the real, not real game. Because it felt most helpful to him to do whatever he could to move away from the brainwashed state and back into clarity. Well, it feels helpful to me too. To move away from the brainwashed state, away from the deluded state and into clarity. So it feels helpful to notice when I'm telling a story. I'm doing this because. And then just drop it. Right in mid-telling. Just drop it and accept that I am being moved. It's only a stepping stone, but it's the stepping stone that leads towards truth rather than the one that leads away from it. And with that, I am going to go forward to 684. And I will read 684 to you from the Seven Steps to Awakening. This is also a Yoga Vasistha quote. I am not the enjoyments. Nor do they belong to me. This intellect and the sense organs are not me, nor are they mine. They are inert, and I am sentient. I am not the mind, which is the root cause of this ignorant cycle of birth and death. So here we go. We're still playing the game real and not real. With Yoga Vasistha, who I must say has a lot more clarity in this game. He's much more a master of this game than I am. Okay, so let's listen to Yoga Vasistha. He's like Katniss, right? Katniss knew what was real and not real in the movie, and Peeta did not know. So Peeta would ask Katniss, real or not real. Well, Yoga Vasistha is like Katniss. We're Peeta. Right? So let's listen to what Yoga Vasistha / Katniss is saying about real and not real. I am not the enjoyments, nor do they belong to me. This intellect and the sense organs are not me, nor are they mine. They are inert, and I am sentient. I am not the mind, which is the root cause of this ignorant cycle of birth and death. Great clarity on the not real. All right, let's look at the journal entry for 684. Most importantly, actively notice what I am not. The ego is definition and attachment. As definition and attachment, it acquires a myriad of ideas as part of the self concept. Some of these ideas are opinions held to. Some of these ideas are acquired knowledge and experience. Some of these ideas are roles. Some of these ideas are attitudes or identification with emotional states. Some of these ideas are attachment to people, place, or thing. Some of these ideas are attachment to body, judgments about the body, and experiences with the body. Unconsciously, many of these ideas are accepted as me each day. Wake up from unconsciousness. Pay attention to the mind. Notice all of the ideas I am not. This reminds me very much of Jacqueline's service this morning in the weekly gathering. She was, when Tom read from Gangaji's book. It also reminds me a lot of some of the things that I say when I'm teaching the teachings of Inner Ramana right now at the Center for Inner Peace on Tuesday nights. The ego is really just the sense of an independent me. And notice I say it's the sense, it's that feeling that there is a me, an independent me, that really can make my own decisions and make my own choices, and I'm not connected to the rest of the universe. I mean, maybe in some, mild way, but not really connected, I'm more separate than connected, right? That's the ego. That's the ego. I'm more separate than connected. I'm more independent than a part of something bigger than me. That's the ego sense. And where does that sense come from? Because I think we all have it. So where does that sense come from? It comes from two things, definition and attachment. It actually doesn't come from our experience of being in a world, believe it or not. The experience of being in a world can happen with a full realization of connection and a full realization of not being a me, not being an I. So the ego sense doesn't come from the experience in the world. The ego sense comes from attachment to ideas and definitions of who I am. And as I cling to all of this, by the way, which is mental, notice every bit of that is mental. Attachment, that's mental. Definition, that's mental, right? So as I carry around all of these mental ideas, I then have a sense of an independent me. Now, if I want to play the real, not real game really, really well, like Peeta, and move completely away from delusion, then I need to notice these attachments, and I need to notice these definitions of who I am, and I need to play real or not real with those. You know, like, I can't live without my daughter. Real or not real? Not real. You know, I can't live without my lover. Real or not real? Not real. I have to live in Colorado or I could not be happy. I couldn't be happy living anywhere else. Real or not real? Not real. I really have to live in Hawaii someday. I will never be satisfied until I live in Hawaii. Real or not real? Not real. I mean, there are just so many ideas that we carry around that we can play this game with. And we can start to see a lot of ideas just to kind of dump, just to kind of throw overboard, right? Let's look at some of these ideas. So some of these ideas are opinions held to. So opinions on gun control, for example, opinions on abortion, opinions on the best way to get the economy going again, or even an opinion on whether the economy does need help or whether the economy is fine. Opinions on which version of A Course in Miracles is the best version to read. Opinions on which conferences or retreats are the best ones to go to, or even if one should go to conferences and retreats. I mean, you know, there's no way I could sit here and list all of the opinions that we can carry around in our heads, be identified with, and then act out in some way. You know, act out in some way. Whether we act them out by saying something, by doing something, or just by thinking something, right? What if we started noticing within ourselves every time we had an opinion, and when we caught ourselves, we threw it overboard? And if you're anything like me, lots of times, you know when you're going to notice these opinions? As they're coming out of your mouth, if you're lucky, or you'll really notice them when you've already said it, you didn't even notice it, you know, blah, 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 and then somebody disagrees with you. Oh, that's a great time to notice you just had an opinion. You know, like, let's imagine that your opinion is, you know, we should do more to illegalize guns. It's just ridiculous the types of guns that are legal in this country. You know, why do we need to have semi-automatic and automatic weapons? People don't use those to hunt, right? And then somebody says something back about how if we take guns away, only criminals will have guns. You know, we need guns to protect ourselves. As soon as you hear that opposite opinion, you can say, oh my gosh, that's one of my opinions. I'm going to throw that overboard. And you know what you can say to the person is, you know what? I just take that back. You don't have to say you're right, because that's just another opinion. And the truth is, they're just as mistaken as you are. You're both equally mistaken about real and not real. But you can say, you know what? I take that back. Never mind. Forget I said that. You can just throw the opinion overboard. This is a demonstration of how to play the real and not real game. Let's see what else we have here. Some of these ideas are acquired knowledge and experience. So, for example, I am a teacher. I was trained as a teacher and a course writer when I was in the Air Force, right? And then I worked as a professional corporate trainer, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Now, this is my experience, right? I can say that that's a part of the history of experience that I've had. You know, just like I've had the experience of traveling about the world, right? These things, I mean, that's true. However, is that who I am? Am I a world traveler? Am I a teacher? Am I, you know, anything that is a part of my experience or a part of my accumulated knowledge? Am I a course student? Is that who I am? Right? These are the types of things that we just kind of accept into the mind without even noticing as definitions of who I am. And they add to the ego sense and we don't even see. So what this is suggesting is that we start to see and we start to throw those things overboard. I'm not a course student. Whew. That's not who I am. That's not what I am. Maybe I do or don't spend time with the Course right now every day because that's how I moved. But that's not who I am. Right? I am not a seven steps to awakening student. Of course, I would never say that. That's too much of a mouthful. It's much easier to say I'm a Course student. But you guys get the point, right? I'm not a seven steps student. Right? That's not who I am. It doesn't make sense to even define myself that way. It doesn't make sense to define myself as a teacher. It doesn't make sense to define myself as a mother. It doesn't make sense to define myself in any way. And I think we've just covered two of these, right? We've just covered some of our ideas of definition are based on acquired knowledge and experience, like world traveler. Some are roles, like mother. I'm a doctor. I'm a lawyer, right? I'm an unemployed lazy bum. That's what I've always been told, and I accept that identity. I'm an unemployed lazy bum. I'm a drug addict. Right? No, none of these things. Some of these ideas that we accept as a part of the ego sense are attitudes or identifications with emotional states. I am depressed. Right? I am depressed. I am very positive. That's who I am. I am very positive. That's who I am. No, of course not. These are ideas, identifications, experiences that we are defining ourselves by, but it's not true. And all that they are doing is adding to that separate ego sense. Throw them overboard. When you notice yourself doing it, throw them overboard. They're not needed. Some of these ideas are attachment to people, place, or thing, right? Some of these ideas are attachment to body or even judgments about the body. I am fat. I saw a funny sign today. It's a Christmas sign. It said, Dear Santa, please bring me a big fat bank account and a slim body. A big fat bank account and a slim body. And please don't mess them up like you did last year. Or please don't mix them up like you did last year. I guess last year there was a fat body and a slim bank account, right? But we identify with these things. We identify with the body, whether we perceive it as beautiful or not. We identify with it. Whether we perceive it as healthy or not, we identify with it. We even identify with our bank account. I see myself as a rich person, or I see myself as a middle-class person, or I see myself as a poor person, or I see myself as a person who can just never get ahead, right? We identify with these things. And all of these identifications add to the sense, the feeling, that I am a separate person. So we do want to start seeing this. We want something in us to catch us. Not with judgment, not with guilt, not with I'm stupid. That's just another idea. But we do want to see ourselves identifying and defining who we are so that we can throw it overboard, so that we can let go of these ideas that are causing this sense of separation. We want to play the real, not real game. We want to walk away from delusion and into clarity, into truth. As Gangaji said this morning, not my truth, but real truth. Now you often hear people say, that's my truth, not my truth. That just emphasizes I again. Not my truth. I'm not here to speak my truth. Real truth. We're here to learn what's real. And with that, my time is up, so I will let go. I will be back in a couple of hours for the daily contemplation. And so maybe I will see some of you here then. Good night, everyone.
Good night, Regina, and thank you so much. I think we'll be playing. I know I will definitely be playing the real or not real game and giving up what is not real. And thank you for that quote too, Arthur, for be still. Just be still and forget this world and come with holy empty hands onto your God.